Maybe I was eager for a fall, the thing I feared most. I had been easing toward it, testing the water, not sure what I wanted, except not to be everything I knew I wasn't. It was a party, a stupid one. We were bored, uninvited. No one knew us. We didn't know any of them. It was crowded. Tight circles of strangers were drinking and smoking, oblivious to us. Crashing the party was a thrill that lasted 5 minutes. We were about to leave, but then the unexpected happened. A fight broke out. We didn't know what might happen next. We were out of our neighborhood, out of our league. We were scared and we ran. I had the keys in my purse. Locke and I were on one side of the car, Kara on the other. "Hurry, Jenna, hurry!" It was dark. I frantically searched the black cavern of my purse for the keys. When I found them, I threw them to Kara, my fingers outstretched, trying to be sure of my aim. There was yelling, shouts. We were out of our element, panicked. We were only rule followers pretending to be renegades. Other cars screeched away. "Go, Kara!" Locke yelled from the back seat. She did. When we made it to the highway, the adrenaline that streaked through us subsided and our fear was replaced with laughter. I hadn't noticed that Kara's foot was still firmly on the accelerator. None of us did. The curve came up so fast. She braked, but it was too late. The car spun, hit the graveled shoulder. There were last-minute shouts. "Turn! Kara! Stop!" Kara was crying and screaming, desperately turning the steering wheel. We were tossed about, none of us bothering with seat restraints in our rush to leave the party. The car skidded, then rolled when the shoulder turned to cliff, a blurred, chopped nightmare where sound and light cut through us. I was screaming, flying, tumbling, glass sprayed like 1,000 knives, and the world had no up or down. The fear was so complete it webbed together our screams and motion, blinding white heat and light. Flying free, and the sickening thud of my skull on soil. Or was it Kara I heard, landing next to me? And then the sudden sharp contrast of quiet sounds, like tinkling crystal, dripping, hissing, a drawn-out crackle, and soft moans that seemed to hover in the air above me. And finally, just blackness. I never saw Kara and Locke again. I heard them. For a few seconds I heard their breaths, their sighs, their screams. I heard them, like I do now. And for all those months, in the dark place where I waited to be reborn, not knowing if I would ever see light again, between my own voiceless cries and pleading, those were the sounds I heard. Over and over again. The hellish sounds of Kara and Locke dying. Self-preservation. They are my witnesses. They alone know that I didn't drive. Someday, sometime, someone will come for me, and I will have Kara and Locke to help me, save me. I can keep them. The entitled Jenna. How bad could it be to exist in a box forever? The last disc. The cut glass panes of the living room cabinet prism my reflection into 12 distorted pieces. I search those pieces, the borrowed blues, reds, and violets, blended with glimmering flesh. I look for a shine. A difference, but I see nothing that says I am different from Dane. Versions of me and my friends are trapped where I never want to go again, and I won't help them. Blues, reds, violets, flesh, fragments, almost human. The same reflection Dane might have. I turn from the cabinet and go to the credenza that takes up a large portion of the living room wall. I rummage through the drawer looking for Year 7, Jenna Fox, The year where I can watch a girl who was still a child and didn't know about expectations. A year when blue birthday cakes and surprises were all that mattered. Year 7. Probably the last year before I knew I was special. Mother has straightened the drawer and the disc is not where I left it. I run fingers along the file of discs, searching for it, when I notice something else. The camera. It's at the back of the drawer, in a space that has been saved for it, but it has been jarred. A disc has partially popped out. I reach in and pull it loose and look at the label. Jenna Fox, year 16, disc 2. It shakes between my fingers. This is the last disc. The real last disc. This is the one Lily wanted me to watch. A recital. Jenna floats across the stage. Her movements are precise. Her arms are curved in a graceful arch. Her feet pointing. Her legs extending. Arabesque, Jenna. Chassé, jeté, entrelacé, plié, pas de bourrée, pirouette, Jenna. All at perfect angles. Perfect timing. She raises en pointe, her balance pure elegance. But her face is dead. The performance is all in her arms and legs and muscles, and none of it is in her heart. I remember that night. The feel of the slipper, the ribbon snug at my ankles, the tight bodice of my costume that showed off my perfect tiny waist, the moisture forming at the nape of my neck. I remember before I even see it repeated on the disc. I remember looking out into the audience that night, my performance almost complete, and seeing Lily in the second row, and the disappointment in her eyes, and how that shook me, and gave me permission all at the same time for what came next. Relevé. Relevé. My well-trained muscles and bones were speaking to me, ordering me to perform. Relevé, Jenna. But I was frozen. The music passed me by. Relevé, Jenna. The audience is fidgeting, uncomfortable, hoping that the moment can be salvaged. I'm not sure it can. I'm looking at Lily's eyes on me. But I'm seeing us at her kitchen counter just a few days before. I was complaining about my upcoming recital. Who are you, Jenna? How can anyone know if you don't show them? I'm tempted. Just once I'd like to let it out. And what would you do? While I was there on stage, I'd move in all the ways I've dreamed of. I'd stomp and grind and swing my hips and show them all. So what's stopping you? I remember she was serious. And I remember looking at her like she was crazy. It wouldn't be appropriate. I'd let too many people down.
You mean your parents? I think they'd live.
The audience is holding its breath. The music has stopped. Relevé, Jenna! My muscles are demanding action. Stomp! Grind, Jenna! Swing your hips! And then I feel it. My calves stiffen. My heels lift. Relevé. And then a quick hop to en pointe. Hold. Hold. Down to fourth position. Plié. And bow. The audience heaves a single sigh of relief, even though I'm completing my dance long after the music has stopped. Their zealous applause erases the gap. I have delivered. That is all that matters. Pieces. A bit for someone here, a bit there, and sometimes they don't add up to anything whole. But you're so busy dancing, delivering, you don't have time to notice. Or are afraid to notice. And then one day you have to look, and it's true. All of your pieces fill up other people's holes, but they don't fill your own. The beach.
Over here, Claire calls, waving her arm.
Lily waves back. Neither of us move, and Mother resumes her walk through the tide pools. The ride to the beach was tense. We hardly talked in the car. Mother insisted we go, saying the unseasonably warm March day was perfect for a walk at the beach.
"She needed this," Lily says.
"I didn't." Lily pulls her sweatshirt over her head and ties it around her waist.
"Then what do you need, Jenna?"
Her voice is sharp. I look at her and knot inside. I can't answer. I shake my head and walk away. She grabs my arm and spins me around.
"I asked you something. What do you need?"
I pull away. How dare she treat me like a... I want to spit my words into her stupid face is what I need to do. But they just keep catching, like they're snared on something inside. I stand there, my lips still searching for words.
"Tell me," she says.
I can't. She lets go of my arm and sighs.
"And that has always been your problem, Jenna," she says softly. "You've always been two people. The Jenna who wants to please, and the Jenna who secretly resents it. They won't break, you know. Your parents never thought you were perfect. You did."
What is she talking about? I never thought... They placed me on a pedestal from the day I was born. What choice did I have but to be perfect? And if I lagged in math or soccer or navel-gazing, they got me a personal tutor. And then I was tutored and coached until I was perfect. I've been under a microscope my entire life. From the moment I was conceived, I had to be everything, because I was their miracle. That's what I had to live up to every day of my life. How dare you say that it was me when it was them? I was conceived to please.
What's going on? Claire asks, running over to see why our voices are raised.
Lily's eyes hold on to me, like she's talking me down from a ledge. Her voice is low.
"Start small," she says. "I'll ask again. What do you need?"
"I need..." The words are dammed up.
"Start small."
"A skirt. A red skirt."
"What?"
Claire's confusion is obvious, but her eyes are intense and clear, focusing on me like I'm the whole Pacific Ocean.
"And room. I need room."
Claire looks at Lily.
"What is going on?"
"Listen," Lily says.
She grabs Claire by the shoulders and turns her to face me.
"Just listen."
"I don't want to be your miracle anymore. I can't be your miracle anymore. I need to be here on this planet with the same odds as everyone else. I need to be like everyone else."
I slow. I take a breath.
"I can't ever really be alive if I can't die, too. I need the backups, Kara's, Locke's, and mine."
Mother's face is frozen like I'm speaking babble.
"I want to let them go,"
I whisper. She doesn't move.
"Destroyed,"
I clarify, raising my voice so that for once my intentions can't be twisted. Her face loosens, goes blank. She says nothing for much too long. Now it's me, frozen, and Lily waiting, wondering if anything I said made it through to her. And then the part in her lips closes and her shoulders pull back.
"We'll stop on the way home and get you a red skirt,"
she finally says. She turns and walks away, only pausing for a moment to shoot Lily a stiff, cold stare. Calculations. The ride home is quiet. I watch Lily, Mother. I see their eyes, unfocused, staring at the road ahead but not seeing it. Each of us are bound by our own thoughts, seeing the edges of our limits, maybe seeing the edges of others. How far can we push? How far can we bend? How much can we preserve? How can we get what we want? The calculations are endless, not knowing the future, not knowing how far is too far for any of us. My thoughts drift, search, calculate, remembering, jumping to the past and back again.
My baby. My precious baby. I'm so sorry.
The hospital room is dim. Her chair is pulled close. She rocks, hums, whispers, and she smiles. The smiles are the hardest to watch.